Hi, it's Michael Senoff, and you're beginning part two of the sample workshop for the Hidden Internet Marketing Asset System. Part two is titled, Never Take the Shotgun Approach with Your Advertising. According to David, if business owners aren't tracking their advertising, they're throwing money away. It's absolutely essential that they figure out what's working and what's not in order to reduce advertising budgets and make the most of every dollar. Fortunately, tracking advertising dollars online is much easier than offline with embedded links and coupons. And in part two, you'll hear methods for tracking both online and offline advertising so that you can help your prospects eliminate the guesswork and figure out a practical strategy. You'll also hear how prospects can quit wasting space on their cash register receipts and credit card terminals and how to use that space instead to promote a website. You'll hear ways to use email to bring in customers, track advertising, and stay in touch, and what to suggest to prospects who are just not good at writing email copy. You'll learn the best time to send out emails for an upcoming promotion. And you'll learn a do-it-yourself approach to building a list from scratch using just a website in a lead capture form. You'll also learn how to get a website up cheaply and what people can expect to pay for good web hosting. So get ready, take some notes, and let's get going with part two.
Okay, folks, so just like I said, before we get on to slide 8, I'm actually going to go over something with you here that will build your list and, like I said, make you thousands of dollars in revenue if you do this correctly. And it's not that tough to do. Not hard to do at all. What you do is, in each one of your businesses, of course, you have a cash register. Most of you also have a credit card terminal. And I'm sure that you've all called the number, the support number, on the side of the credit card terminal at several different times, correct? And waited for 15, 20 minutes, or an hour as he's put on hold, 15, 20 minutes normally, for a customer service representative to come on there and help you out of whatever jam or problem that you're having with that particular piece of hardware. So what we're actually going to cover here is a really nifty trick that y'all can use that works really, really well to build a list of buyers for your particular business. What is the one thing that everybody that comes into your place of business leaves with if they buy something? If they buy something. Yeah, of course the merchandise. Okay, that's a given. How about a receipt? Everybody gets a receipt that buys something or purchases something in your store, correct? Okay, so here's what you need to do. This is really simple to do, but it works extremely well. Is when you get back to your place of business, you need to call the customer support number on the side of the cash register and the customer support number on the side of the credit card terminal. And here's what you need to ask them. You need to ask them how you change the header information on that piece of equipment. Yep, header, H-E-A-D-E-R. They will know what that means. Now, you might have to wait a little bit on hold, as you're familiar with that already, I'm sure. But what actually happens is somebody will send you to the technical support department where somebody there at that particular company will walk you through the process of changing the header on your receipt. So after you've got the capture mechanism, in other words, the autoresponder and database and everything, once that's built and installed on your site, then is the time for this step. And here is what you want to put on that receipt. So you might want to write this down. You need to put, you know, whatever is on there, Terry's Sporting Goods or Bob's Shoe Store, whatever it is, you need to change that. And here's what you need to change it to. So write this down. We appreciate your business, exclamation point. We appreciate your business, exclamation point. Next sentence needs to say, for preferred customer discounts and coupons, go to www, whatever your new site is, whatever the capture mechanism is loaded on, that's the site you want them to hit. You want to put, thank you for your business, exclamation point, for preferred customer discounts and coupons. If you're not going to use coupons, then, of course, don't put that in there. But for preferred customer discounts and coupons, go to or visit whatever you're comfortable with, www.yoursite.com. And the last two words in capital letters need to say, it's free, with an exclamation point, okay? So we appreciate your business, exclamation point. For preferred customer discounts, go to www.yoursite.com. It's free. Now, that works in several different ways. Number one is it really does tell them how much you appreciate their business. And everybody looks at their receipt. I don't really care who they are. Everybody does. So once they look at the receipt, what are they going to see? They're going to see a place where they can become a preferred customer. Well, everybody wants to be a preferred customer, everybody. So they go there and sign up, and they get on your list. And what that has just done is effectively added someone who has already bought from you, knows you, likes you, trusts you, just like we covered before, and has already spent money with you. Now, I know we went over this before, because I see a lot of you looking at me kind of odd, but I also noticed that none of you were writing that down. This is really, really important. That's why I can't reiterate it enough. If you do this, you can gain a buying list of customers in short order. Depending on your foot traffic, you know, you could add 60, 70, 100 people a day. Pretty cool, huh? And yes, it is just that simple. So if you do that correctly, that will add quite a bit of money to your bottom line and will also start your list in the right direction. Okay. That's a good question. What if there is no 800 number on the cash register? Some of you have bought used cash registers or estate cash registers. I've actually been in several stores that have done that, and that's a good question. What you can do is find out who the manufacturer is and the model number from the bottom of it, and then look them up on the net and see if you can get in touch with them. A lot of times they will have an owner's manual that you can buy for $5 that they'll ship it out to you, and that helps tremendously. So if you've ever had problems with that, that's one of your best bets. It's usually on the back of the cash register facing the customer or on the bottom, unfortunately. But there is some information on that piece of equipment somewhere that says who manufactured it, and I can guarantee you there is a model number on there. You need to just copy that down, do a little research, get in touch with the company, and see if they can help you out. And while you have them on the phone, see if they can walk you through that. It's not hard. But it is worth it, wouldn't you agree? The next slide has anyone seen my ROI? Everybody knows what that is, correct? Stands for Return on Investment. Yep, ROI, Return on Investment. So let me ask you a really quick question. We talked about ad tracking and how to find out your advertising budget, how effective it is. We're going to really kind of dig into this here for a minute because it's very important. If you're not tracking your advertisement, I can guarantee you that you're throwing a lot of money out the window. A lot. Now listen to this carefully. If you're not tracking your advertising, you have no clue what's actually working and what doesn't work. Make sense? You know something's working because you're getting business, correct? But you don't know what out of the myriad of sources you're using for advertising actually does work and which ones don't. Would you agree with that? If you're not tracking your advertising, there is no ROI. Unless you have a tracking system, you have no way of knowing what's effective and what's not. So it pretty much stands to reason that if you don't know what's effective, a lot of your monthly ad budget is probably being thrown away needlessly. You know, just think about that. That's one of the most important questions that you need to answer about your business. Monthly ad budgets can run from $2,000 to a very small place of business all the way up to six figures. You know, I've seen the run of both ends of that. And believe it or not, some of the ones that were in six-figure monthly budgets for advertising were the most wasteful because they had no clue what was working. So if you're not tracking it, there's no way to measure any return on investment. How do you know if you have any return on investment unless you're tracking it? See where I'm getting at here? It does make sense, though, doesn't it? That's a good question, too. How do we track it? Hey, you know, I told you I saw a lot of light bulbs going off around the room, all the light bulbs over everybody's little heads. So how many of you would like to know how to take care of that? Now we're getting somewhere. Just about everybody. Now, there are some ways you can do that, and a lot of business owners don't appreciate this. The power of this will save you tons and tons of money, and you just have to ask for customer cooperation as well. If you're doing offline advertising, one of the only ways that you can track it is with coupon codes. So you have a code put into the offers that you're sending out. That's direct mail or towel packs or something similar to that. And you can also use a code in your print advertising. Yep, even in newspapers, you can actually use print advertising, track it by putting a special code in that particular advertisement. So even if you're running like a half-page ad or something in the Sunday paper for an upcoming sale, you could actually offer an additional 5% discount or 10% discount, and you have to measure that in. If you're having a 25% off sale, then you might want to tell them that they can get an additional 5% by mentioning this code, and you put that code in there. And it can be anything. It doesn't really matter what it is. It can be the owner's first name. It can be a number. It can be anything that you want it to be. And the next step for that is, of course, training your staff and the cashiers or the salespeople, whoever you want, to make sure they ask them if they have a coupon code. Now, most of the time, the people that come in from the newspapers will remember seeing the code, but they don't remember what it is. There's a way around that. You just have to dig a little bit and ask them what brought them into the store. And when they say, I saw the thing in the newspaper, hey, there you go. There's a hit. So there's one way you can track that. Do the same thing on the flyers. Any coupons, promotional materials that you send out can have a special code on those as well. So if they bring them into the store, you're going to have to write that down. So at the end of the sale, you should be able to just take a little legal pad that you wrote everything down on. And yes, it is a pain in the butt, but this is essential to finding out what's working and what's not. You only have to do this once. Do the numbers change frequently or from time to time? Absolutely they do. But this will give you a general idea of what's effective and what's not right now. And I know it can be a bother, you know, to some of your customers, but just explain it to them. Just tell them we're trying to track what our advertising is actually doing. And most of those will understand that. And it's not a big deal to them. It's more of a big deal to you than it is to them. Believe me, they don't care. So you might consider it intrusive, but to them, if they can help you, they will if they can. Customers are like that. Most customers are like that. So that's a method of how you can do that for tracking offline advertising. You can track your offline advertising just like your online advertising. Online, of course, is much, much easier to track. So everybody got that? But you could even offer a drawing. That's a good point, too. You know, you might not want to finagle around the ad copy in the thing to give up an extra 5% or 10% discount or whatever. Although, believe me, the return on investment for getting them to answer that question is going to be phenomenal. So you got to pay a little extra to get that information. That's the way I look at it as a consultant. Now, on the other side of that, if you don't want to give them a special discount in addition to the sale price, which many of you don't want to do that, and I don't blame you for that, there is a way around that, too. You could have a drawing. There's all kinds of different ways you can do it. Yeah, you could have a drawing for something that's in your place of business that's a fairly popular item, you know, and you could keep it at whatever price point you want and have them fill out just a little index size card to drop their name in the box. And one of the questions on there needs to be, what brought you into our store today? And then you need to put it on there. A, newspaper ad. B, direct mailer. C, search engine or internet, you know, or whatever else you want to put on there. Billboards, park benches, your Uncle Earl's car that you had painted with your logo on it. Right. You just want to make sure that you list all of your advertising resources that you used for that particular sale. Make sense? Absolutely. Does everybody understand the importance of doing this at least one time? But you also need to understand that if you're not using the same advertising methods from this point forward, say you use cable TV and radio only for one sale, and the next time you've used newspaper and print ads, coupons, anytime you use a different form of advertising other than what you originally did this little test with, you need to do it again. You only have to do it once, but you need to test every single form of advertising that you're currently using to bring customers into the store. Now, wouldn't you agree that common sense would dictate once you do this and you add things up on your legal pad when it's over with, not hard to do, that you can look at the average sale per customer. We call that a CPA deal, cost per acquisition. That's how much it costs you to get that customer and how much they spent. So your average sale. You can get that through your credit card terminal, by the way. Cash registers, I'm not really sure about. Credit card terminals, that's available information. You may have to call them because every terminal is different. But you can actually get your average sale. It usually prints out on the daily batch. So your average sale, add all of those up, go down to the bottom, and you're going to find out what your return on investment is. So once again, if you have a full-page newspaper ad that costs you $4,000, but it brought you 12 customers, you know, that all spent $300, at least you know where you're at. You're about at the break-even point. We call that a BEP. Same thing with any form of advertising. Find out what your average sale was, how many came from that method of advertising in particular. Then subtract the advertising cost from the profit, and you got a real good idea of what you're throwing away. And yes, I have had some clients that were shocked because a lot of regular customers came in. They didn't see the newspaper ad. They didn't see the coupon. They didn't see the... or they didn't see any of that stuff, or the commercial. They're a regular buying customer. So they were coming to his place anyway, but they saw the sale sign for that particular sale in the window and decided to go in. But I think the results that you're going to get from that, a lot of you, it's going to shock you as to how much money you're actually wasting on advertising. You know, even if you're only doing, say, an advertising budget of $60,000 a year, I know that sounds like a whole lot to some of you in here, but, you know, that's about $5,000 a month. That's not a lot of advertising. On the other side of that, what if you found out through this method right here that about $3,000 of that was totally ineffective? Would that make a difference in your profit? Absolutely it would.
For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
Got a question back there. Go ahead. That's a great question, too. Everybody heard that, right? Okay. That's a good question. And it kind of opens a can of worms in a way, but let's say you are wasting $3,000. You know you're wasting $3,000 because you got almost no response from whatever that advertising medium was. After you've tracked it, you got almost zero response, or you got such a minimal response that it does not justify. Discontinue it and put it into something that is working, because guess what? Now you know what's working. Yeah, I might be some dumb, but I'm not plumb dumb. Just as an example, let's say you spent $5,000 for the month. $2,000 of that was on a newspaper ad that was coded, and $3,000 of it was on direct mailing in a coupon type situation. So you find out at the end of it all that you only made $208 off the $3,000 you spent from the mailing, but you actually made $2,500 from the newspaper ad. And that's just what you can track. So what do you need to do next month? Well, you obviously need to drop the $3,000 you spent in the direct campaign, because that was totally ineffective. It cost you money. You didn't make anything on it. So you've reduced your ad budget $36,000 a year. Would that help your profit margin? Absolutely it will. And if you wanted to go into bigger and bigger papers or whatever and track those from that point on, you can do that as well. You know, but at least you know from now on, if you spend $2,000, let's say you're going to make $3,000, you know, in newspapers. Some of you are going to spend $2,000 and make $5,000. You just have to figure out what it is that's working and what's not. And what is not working, get rid of it or fix it. And I'm not going to go into fixing it, because that's an entirely different workshop. Don't really have enough time for that. But there are a lot of ways you can turn advertising campaigns around so they are a lot more effective. But that gets into a whole lot of complicated stuff. But stick with what you know for a fact is generating a profit. That'll save you a lot of headache and give you some sort of general direction as to where you need to be headed. So some of you in here have figured out a lot of this is how to cut your ad budget and increase your profits at the same time. That's what we just went over, right? It works. Online is totally, totally different. With online, it's very easy to track it because you can actually use the autoresponder service I mentioned before, the AWeber deal or GetResponse or Constant Contact or whatever you use. You can actually embed a link in each email that tracks what they call the click-through rate. And that will tell you how many people clicked your link to get to the site for your sale offer, if you put up a separate sale offer. That'd be the only time you'd ever use that. Or unless you're doing a survey or a poll or something similar to that. But you know where I'm coming from there. You really don't need to get into a lot of that unless you're going to do that on your own, which I figure most of you are not. Now, on the other side of that, it's very simple to track ads from an email campaign, what's effective and what's not. And here's how you do that. Just insert a coupon at the very bottom of the email. Doesn't have to be anything fancy, although, of course, you can put some graphics on it and kind of make it stand out and pop. You know, buy one, get one half off, if that's your sale, just as an example, then what you can do is print that, you know, in about the last quarter of the page at the bottom of the email. And you tell the customer at the beginning of the email that you're really happy that they're your customer, blah, 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 blah. You know, this is a sale we've got going on for preferred customers, you know, that type thing. And in order for them to redeem this, they need to print this out and bring it with them. Now, you might not think a lot of people would do that, but to get that deal, they will. It's a psychological thing. And yes, my wife has printed out coupons to save $5 before. No joke. She got something from one of the bigger companies that has a store in the mall, and she's on their email list, and she got a discount for $5 off of any purchase if she brought that into the store by a certain date. And she printed it, and the next time we were over there, she used it. So it is effective. And of course, you can track with that legal pad how many people come in, just keep the coupons. They need to cut them off or give you the whole email. Doesn't really matter. You just keep them in there. And if you have to pay somebody to run your email campaign for you, say you pay somebody $100 to do a broadcast, write the copy for the email, put the coupon on there, and send it out to your database of customers, look at the ROI on that. How many coupons do you think you're going to get over the course of that sale? It's going to be quite a bit. And that only costs you $100 total. Pretty good deal, huh? Now you're moving into the 21st century of marketing. Like I said earlier, and I'll reiterate this again, every single one of you in here, if you want to know something about a product that you're getting ready to buy, where do you go? That's right, on the Internet. You need to know how important that is. Does that make total sense to you, though? You just put the coupon in the email itself, and you can set it to go out any time that you want it to. Yes, you can actually put a time and date in there and everything. You can go out whenever you want it to. If you have your annual budget for your sales already set up, you have somebody that's fairly good, they could program every email that you have to reflect every sale that you've got for the entire year. And once you do that one time, you're finished for the entire year. Anybody that comes into the system will see the sales and get the coupons. You can set it up as a broadcast. A lot of different ways you can do that. If you're going to outsource that kind of stuff, which I would probably highly recommend, then it takes it out of your hands. You don't have to fool with it. You can spend 10 minutes on the phone with somebody as opposed to 2.5 hours trying to do it yourself. Big, big difference. So if you know how to write an email offer, you can actually test your ad pretty much for free. If you know how to write ad copy or direct response copy, you can actually test your ads for free with email and then spend your ad budget on what you know is working. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay, that's a good question, too. What if you don't know how to write an email offer? Outsource it. There's tons and tons of copywriters out there, ad copy, that type thing. If you don't know one or you're not real sure about that, like I said, you can get one of my cards when you leave. Give me a call, and I can give you some different resources that will probably help you in that area. So if you can't write e-copy, of course, you're not going to be able to test your ad. You're basically just going to have to pay somebody to write the offer and to send it out for you. You know, and you can outsource that, like I said, to whoever's doing your list management for anywhere from $50 to $100. About $100 is the average. They can write an email offer for your customer base and send it out to them at the time that you want them to. Now, it's also really important. Let's say you have a sale that it's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You might want to write this down. Also pretty important that if you have a sale Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, that the offer hits them, say, a couple of days before. Tuesday and Thursday, this is what you want to write down. Tuesday and Thursday are great days for emailing. It's statistically proven. Great days for emailing. Bigger response rate. Nobody's figured out why yet, but Tuesday and Thursday work real well. So if the sale is starting on Friday, you might want to have, your marketing guy should understand this, but in email, you'll need to hit them more than once in order to get the response that you need. So statistically, people will go five to eight contacts before they actually buy something on the Internet itself. Now, brick-and-mortar business is a little bit different. Doesn't need to be 8 times just to get them in your store. But if you're having a sale, because they already know who you are anyway, so that's a big difference. Once you send it to this list of buyers, you want to send it on Tuesday if your sale starts on Friday. You can kind of give them a heads up or a teaser, more or less, about what's coming this coming weekend. And then, of course, on Thursday, you want to send them the actual coupons. On Tuesday, you want to give them a heads up and tell them that the coupons are coming for a super special sale, blah, 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 that type stuff. So you want to let them know that it's coming. So on Thursday, when you send out the actual offer, then they're going to be aware of it and you're going to get more response. Now, I would also send one out on Friday and maybe even Saturday if it's all the way through the weekend. And on Saturday, of course, you can say 24 hours left, you know, however you want to phrase that. No, go ahead. Yes, I do. I write ad copy too. How could you tell? Yes, you want to put the fear of loss in there toward the end of the sale. Hey, the sale's ending, you know, that type scenario. And that works really well. So getting back to the slides, just imagine for a minute that using a receipt trick and the other things that you've learned in here, you could build a large enough list of buyers and simply send them an email offer every time that you have a sale. What if you could practice this, like we talked about, see how effective it is, and then not spend the other $3,000 or $4,000 that you tracked earlier that was totally ineffective? Would that help your ad budget? Absolutely it would. Another question? Yep, that's a good question, too. How do you know when your list is big enough? It actually depends on the size of your business, and it varies. But normally, if you have even 1,000 people on your list, these are all buyers. So the response rate that you're going to get from is usually much higher than it would be just somebody cold coming in off the street. unless, of course, they're coming for the sale you advertise, for the most part. Most of the time, if you can get 800 to 1,000 subscribers, it'll astound you. That can actually produce. So you just have a coupon, have them print it out, bring it with them, take advantage of the sale, and that is one of the best ways of tracking your own advertising. Simply collect all the coupons, divide them by the number of people on your list, and that'll give you a percentage of customers that responded to your offer. And once you know that, it's pretty easy to figure out what your net profit was. And for a total investment of $100, it's going to floor you. So you pretty much know if one coupon comes in, you're already got some return on that investment. That's just about guaranteed. So everybody got that? All right. So that works really, really well. So once again, change that cash register receipt. That's this section. Change the register receipt, cash register receipt, and change the credit card terminal header. And that's how you can start to track what you're actually doing online, your advertising method. Okay? And for those of you that do have questions on it, I do see some stuff, but we've got to kind of move along here. You can hit me after this, then I'll spend as much time with you, you know, as you need me to. Okay, next. What if you already have a site? Can you add the autoresponder form to an existing site? Sure you can. And a lot of that depends on how your site is laid out and if it has enough room for an autoresponder box. But not to worry if it does not have enough room to fit an autoresponder box in there somewhere. I'm going to show you how to take care of that. There's two different options. If you want to add a lead capture mechanism or the autoresponder form to a site that you already have. The first, everybody's seen it, is called a static inline autoresponder form. Those are the opt-in forms on the websites that are actually part of the website. And I know you guys have seen those. You've seen them before where it's got the little box right there, say on the right-hand side or the left-hand side, whatever. It says, you know, the box there for your name and email, and it says, put your information in here to receive your free report or whatever it is. That's an inline static form. That has to be built into the aesthetics of your website itself. So some stuff might have to be rearranged on there depending on how much room you have on there. Well, the other option, and you might want to write this down, is called a light box feature. Now, what that does is it adds an autoresponder form to an existing site without changing the appearance or layout of the site at all. You're probably not as familiar with these, but you have seen them. You just didn't know what they were called. A light box feature will allow you to set a delay of whatever you want, like 3 or 4 seconds is usually the norm before it starts to activate. So when someone visits your site, 3 or 4 seconds later, your website fades into the background and the autoresponder form appears right in the center of the screen. Has anybody seen that? Where you hit a site and the site fades out and the opt-in box is right there in the center of the screen. It's right in your face. Yep, that's called a light box feature. Now that hasn't interfered with that website at all. What it does, though, is grab your attention really quick. So you've either closed out of that box or you've got to put your information in. And if you put your information in, it'll close itself. Once they hit submit, you're on your list, and that box disappears. Your site fades back in, and they're shopping. Response rates to the light box are a little higher than they are to static inline because they're right in your face, and you can't get out of them unless you either close it or fill the information out. So like I said, the only way to get rid of it, you know, is just close it, usually in the bottom right-hand corner, or put your information in. Okay, now I loaded one here just on my server just so you guys could see this. Now watch this. We're going to hit this site here. See that? Hang on. It's coming sometimes. Yay, there it is. So see that? That works really, really well. So you can see right here I'm going to X out of this. I'm not going to put my own name in there. Because it would just come to me, okay? So how many people have actually seen those? A lot more than I thought. Just about everybody. Pretty cool, huh? That's a good question. You can actually do that with the autoresponders. Just about all the services offer those. And it's actually fairly easy to do. When you're setting up the autoresponder in whatever system you use, it'll give you some choices. It'll ask you, you know, what kind of form do you want? You want an inline form? You want it to appear on the left or the right or the very bottom? Where do you want that inline form? On your site. But if you're in AWeber, because I use them, the top one is checked, and then the radio button that's actually highlighted that is always defaulted to inline. And you just copy and paste the HTML code wherever you want that on your site, and it shows up there. But now, the light box is the very bottom feature on there. So you can actually go into that, and when it says Get HTML Form, the very bottom choice on there has Look Box. And that's what you want. You just copy a little snippet of code and put it between the header and header. You'll see it. and it activates it, and you're good to go. Yep, it'll actually ask you if you want an inline form. The one at the very bottom is called Lightbox. So whichever option you choose, the autoresponder will generate a little snippet of code that you just copy and paste the HTML on your site. That should also help answer the question anyway of, can I do it myself? You know, it's not that difficult to do, but it can be tricky if you don't know how to FTP to your server. Yeah, if you don't know how to edit raw HTML, that can be pretty tough. That's a good question. What is FTP? FTP stands for File Transfer Protocol. So if you're not familiar with that or you've never been in a server, you're much, much better off to outsource it. But FTP is basically how you change the web page and transfer the page as a file to your server. So I really won't go into all of that right now, but suffice it to say that you do have to be familiar with some aspects of FTP and your server if you're going to do this stuff. Make sense? Okay, what if you don't have a site starting from scratch? If you don't have a site at all, of course, there's tons of different options available for websites. You know, they can range in price from $300 or $400 for a basic lead capture site all the way up to $20,000 for a full e-commerce website with all the bells and whistles. The best advice that I can give you about building a site is to remember exactly what you want the site to do. And this is really important, too. A lot of businesses will have their brothers, mothers, uncle, or whoever throw up a website for them that you can look at it, and it's very unprofessional. And that is not what you want your future customers to see when they hit your site. It doesn't need to be fancy, and it doesn't have to have tons of flash players and audio files and videos and all kinds of other stuff, but it does need to look professional. In other words, what's the main function of that website? Is it going to be a catalog-type site that showcases a lot of different products that they can buy online, or is it just going to be an informational site? You know, are customers going to be able to order right on the website, or will they need to come into the store to buy the product? So that's some things you need to consider before you start on a site. In my opinion, you really don't need a site that distracts the customers. That's what I call it. So you pretty much want your website to stay on point with who you are and what you offer. So when you're looking for a company or a webmaster to build your site or help you with your site, it's usually better to try to find somebody that's local. That just stands to reason. Because if you have a problem with it, you don't want to have to call an 800 number on wait on hold. If your site's down, you know, always be careful of ones, you know, that they can sneak in on you. Here's a good example. I had a client a couple of weeks ago who was being charged $497 a month. And see, not a lot of surprised looks in here. I'm not kidding. I almost fell out of my chair when he showed me that. A good hosting company will usually cost between $15 and $30 a month. So you might want to check your stuff when you get back. I've seen some that are 100. I actually pay about 200 for mine, but I have dedicated hosting that allows me to put an unlimited amount of domains and websites. So with the amount of websites I have out there, it still breaks down to about 10 or 12 bucks a month, and I can just keep adding more to them. And most of you do not need a dedicated server. I mean, I sell tons and tons of stuff online 24/7, 365, and it's pretty busy, fortunately for me. But I actually went from a plan that was about $25 a month on hosting. When I started getting a lot of traffic and the bandwidth usage went up, I actually had to up to a dedicated server, which was actually cheaper than paying for the bandwidth overage that I was starting to hit every month. So I got hit with one of those, and I said, yee. So I upgraded to a dedicated server and haven't had a problem since. But for the most part, $25-$30 a month max, you're going to get some really, really good hosting, and you're never ever going to exceed the bandwidth unless you've got 10,000 people a day hitting your site, which is fairly unlikely. So you need to watch out for stuff like that. If you're checking around or going through your existing account for your website and you do have a question, feel free to give me a call, and I'll check it out and help you if I can. So if you're just starting out, always be sure to get two or three prices before you decide what you're going to spend. You know, if you're not really sure what you should be spending, like I said, feel free to give me a call, and I can usually point you in the right direction, you know, or give you some help through some folks that I've been doing business with for years and years. So there you go. Here's the fun part. Here's what everybody loves, the perils of do-it-yourself. So that should answer some of the questions about whether you should outsource or not outsource. I've seen a lot of websites that were, it was pretty obvious that a professional did not build them. And I've seen some pretty good ones, and I've also seen some really bad ones. But what you need to remember is that is you. You know, you're putting your business in front of that client. So, like I said, it does not have to be, you know, an outrageously expensive site, but it does need to be fairly professional or at least business-like. You know, you need to be able to navigate the site if you have different pages fairly easily, and the people need to know when they hit that site that that's a business, okay? Yeah, we've all been here and pretty much decided that all this stuff is not something you want to tackle yourself, although you could, correct? Okay, so we're going to take a short break here, and when we come back, we're going to take about a 10-minute break, and then when we come back, we're going to get into companies, individuals, and where to get websites built, okay? So we'll see everybody back in here in about 10, 12 minutes, and we'll just rock and roll from there. And this is the last segment. We'll be done after this next one. So you guys can get back to your businesses and take care of things. And yes, I'm available, so I'll take a break with you. And if you want to ask me some stuff while we're out there, please feel free.
This is the end of part 2. Please continue to part 3.